8. The golem carrying Gilspower hit the wall hard, and Isadora swept into the room. Her dress had gone pitch black, and while the chamber was glossy black crystal, lit only by a glow lamp shielded behind glass, there now appeared in the walls silver gargoyles and skulls that cackled silently as they looked in. "Did you think I would not find you?" Desidora asked. She poured the magic into and through her again, and another bolt of jet-black energy hissed across the room. This time, Gilspower knocked the bolt aside.
"Cutis oshkaderis," he warned.
"Save it." Ordinarily, Desidora would have had to draw the power for a magical attack from a living soul. Here, surrounded by so much raw energy, all she had to do was endure a little pain. "You destroy the enemy." She flung another bolt, and Gilspower battered it aside as well. "After all the times you said that, I never thought you meant me." Gilspower's golem was back on its feet now. It was moving back toward Derry, who still lay chained to the crystal altar. A golden staff with a hoop set upon its head stood planted at the foot of the altar. The hoop looked just large enough for Desidora to pass her head through it.
"Where's the Narvathis?"
Gilspower said, as Desidora gathered the magic again. He raised himself to bat it aside, but this time the jet-black bolt turned into coiling tendrils that snaked around the golem, writhing and twisting as they worked their way through its armoured body.
"You protect the people!"
Desidora smiled coldly as the tendrils tightened.
"You used me, Gil. The gods used me, and this power used me, and I was okay because you were there."
Crystal cracked as the tendrils tightened further.
"But it was always a lie."
Stains of silver glyphs radiated from her feet, twining along the floor to make patterns of terrible power. They reached the altar and the strange staff with a hoop at the top, remaining surprisingly unchanged by Desidora's aura. No matter.
"And now you pay for it."
"Cutis oshkaderis!"
Gilspower shouted, and the golem's arm swung down. His shining platinum head struck the black tendrils and shattered them, and a wave of energy slammed back into Desidora, sending her sprawling.
"Ululenia!"
Desidora had forgotten about the unicorn in her fury. She looked back and saw her crouched at the doorway, one hand on her head.
"Help me!"
Ululenia pressed forward a step, then fell to her knees.
"I cannot!"
"Berson Larvathis,"
Gilspower said sadly, and raised himself over Derry's unconscious head again.
"No!"
Desidora flung another bolt of energy as she stood, for all the good it did. Gilspower knocked it aside. Then he came down, slowly, gently, and tapped Derry's forehead. The young man bucked, back arched on the altar, and the chains holding him creaked. Then he went limp. The golden staff with the hoop at its head flared brilliant yellow, and then the blazing light coalesced into the space in the middle of the hoop. For a moment, a tiny perfect star shone in that point. Then it exploded, a dazzling burst of light that sent Desidora to her knees. Everything was white, and then, as she blinked away the purple afterimages, she saw, blurry and vague, the golden hoop. It was a gateway now, with a shimmering surface of light covering its surface, like a mirror looking upon an impossible, shining world. First one, then several, and then in a rushing stream, motes of flickering energy leaped from the gateway, flitting out into the chamber and up to the crystal ceiling, where they disappeared.
"The ancients," Desidora whispered.
"Cun cabne alte osiferis,"
Gilspower said to Desidora, as a river of energy flowed from the golden hoop to the ceiling, twisting and snaking like a blazing reflection of the dark coils Desidora herself had created. With a casual gesture, he struck the chains from Derry's body. Then he stepped back, and energy coiled around him, and when it faded, Gilspower and the golem holding him had vanished.
"No!"
Desidora fought back to her feet, gathered another bolt of darkness and flung it at the golden hoop. It struck the portal squarely and did absolutely nothing.
"Get back here, damn you!"
Another bolt hissed out into the glowing river of the ancients, flaring and bouncing off some sort of barrier that kept their energy safe.
"I will find you, Gil. I swear by every damned god in this world and yours, I will find you!"
"Desidora." She looked over at Ululenia's voice. The unicorn was curled up on the floor now, trying to crawl into the room. It was pathetic. If the unicorn had been stronger, Gil's power would not have finished his ritual, would not have escaped, would not... Dairy, Ululenia croaked, and lifted a trembling finger. Desidora looked at the young man, lifeless on the altar, and let the aura of death fall away. Yes, she said, as the silver glyphs faded and her dress slowly lightened back to normal black, as opposed to the eye-hurting black it had been a moment ago. Let me see. It had been less than a minute, and there was no physical injury. If... She pulled every bit of magic from the walls, even tried for the river that was the ancients, although whatever invisible barrier protected it kept her from drawing from them as well. She drew in more magic than she had used for the energy bolts, and it hurt, power blazing inside like a fire in her veins. But pain meant that she was alive. Maybe today it meant even more than that. "I am a priest of Bin Khodar," she said, letting the pain keep her focused as the ocean of energy threatened to pull her away. "I am death." She stepped forward. It felt as though hooks tore at her with every step, the magic locking her in place. She placed a hand on Derry's forehead. "And as the priest of death, I say that it will not take you today, Ribandaris." She poured that power into him, into the naive young boy who had saved the world, into the innocent who had trusted all of them, into the virgin who had taken a dragon for a lover and helped stop a war. For a moment, nothing happened, and she pushed, clapped her hand upon his forehead tighter, like a fool, as though that would somehow help. And deep inside, even though she was blind to the gods with the power of Bin Khodar upon her, she prayed. And it was not a faithful prayer of supplication, but a "damn you all, you owe me" kind of prayer, the kind that comes before bargaining and tears, and a small, desperate "please." Derry bucked again, lunged upright, and sucked in a lungful of air as he clutched at Desidora. "It's all right, it's all right." She pulled him into a hug, her eyes stinging. "What happened? I was on a tree ship, and..." "We'll explain later, I promise." Desidora hugged him tighter, then pulled him up from the altar. He stood, his legs shaky. "For now, we need to..." "Beware!" Ululenia cried, still on her knees at the edge of the room, and Desidora looked at her, and then at the back of the room where she pointed, and saw coils of energy swirling, the same magic that had transported Gil's power away. She took Derry's hand and pulled him from the chamber as the coils shimmered and solidified into a quartet of golems. Unlike the one that had held Gil's power, these were built for battle, massive and armoured, and carrying broad-bladed swords that were longer than Desidora was tall. Desidora pulled the energy around her one more time and flung coils of darkness around the golden hoop, but again it did nothing. "Damn it! Damn it! We must go." Ululenia pushed herself to her feet, and Derry held her up as he stepped back into the tunnel. "Desidora, we must flee." "You're hurt," Derry said, as Ululenia hung on him, and Desidora saw that it was not some cheap trick to maneuver herself into caressing him. She was barely able to stand. "Can we outrun those things?" Desidora backed into the tunnel, with Derry pulling Ululenia. The priestess glared at the golems as they raised their weapons and stepped toward her. "I doubt we can outrun them," Desidora said, and pulled the magic into her a final time. She held up a hand, pointed not at the golems but the ceiling at the edge of the tunnel. "But let us see how fast they can dig." The golems clanked forward, blades raised, but they were too late. Her blast of energy hit the ceiling, and with a crackling rumble, rock and crystal creaked and cracked and slammed down to collapse the tunnel before them. Desidora stared at it until Derry grabbed her hand. "Come on, Sister Desidora," he said, and started to pull her back to the red-lit safety of the main tunnel. "I don't know what's going on exactly, but we should probably run."
"I am with you," Desidora said, "in all respects."
She would need to shake and shiver more later, and there was a good chance channeling that much energy was going to make her sick. But there was no victory and no revenge for her here. Eyes stinging with unshed tears, for several stupid reasons, Desidora ran. Locke, Kale, and the elf had almost worked their way through the golems in the processing centre when the room's light flickered and the long table flared with sudden points of crimson radiance. Westyke and the other nobles had been huddling back there, occasionally attacking but mostly letting the golems do the heavy work, and Locke saw their faces when the items on the table lit up.
"It's the Fasira de Lockenville,"
Westyke called, a broad smile on his face.
"You come from a noble line, your little pigment problem notwithstanding."
Locke chopped a golem's head off, then cut its arms off, and then kicked it into the same vat of acid that she'd used to kill Arako Yorichi. "Your point?"
"It's only right that you should be here," Westyke said. "To see the end of the old order, to see the return of the ancients."
He gestured at the table, and the other nobles in their black jackets each grabbed something from the surface. Locke caught a better look and saw that the nobles held crimson bands of crystal, each about the size of the bracer an archer would wear to protect his forearm while shooting.
"You wondered what Project Paladin was,"
Westyke called out, as Locke started running, smashing another golem aside as it reached for her, and doing a vaulting hip slide over one of the moving belts. It was too late. The noblemen all rolled up their sleeves, pride on their chiselled faces, and fixed the bands on.
"Behold the paladin bands, and behold the paladins who wear them, the bearers of the lords and leaders of this world, returned in glory."
Every one of the noblemen shuddered as the bands clicked into place, glowing brightly on their arms. Crimson light flared in their eyes for a moment, and then every single one seemed to stand a little straighter. Locke stumbled to a halt.
"Holy crap, I was right!" Kale called,
throwing a golem over his hip with an astonished look on his face.
"Did you think that the ancients would have humble forms like ours?"
Westyke taunted. Locke noticed that he hadn't put one of the bands on.
"They are creatures of pure thought, energy uncorrupted by mortal weakness. Do you understand now how foolish you've looked, thinking you could contend with such power?"
"Damn it,"
Irritheloth Leolan said, coming to Locke's side.
"We have lost Isafasira."
Kale stood on Locke's other side.
"Hey, Ethel, did you see how I was right?"
"That is actually the most frightening part of this entire evening."
Irritheloth Leolan lifted his thin wooden blade.
"The door leading outside is sealed. Flight is impossible."
"Nobody's leaving yet," Locke said. "Not until we have Derry."
"The ancients have returned,"
Irritheloth Leolan said quietly.
"His death was the key to doing so. Even you should be able to follow the logic."
"Who am I talking to?" Locke asked. Westyke and the other nobles were separated from her group by a few moving belts.
"Handel Westyke," he called back proudly. "Former protector of the Forge of Ancients and..."
"Not you," Locke rolled her eyes. "Which one of you paladins is in charge?" The nobles in their long black jackets looked at her curiously. Then one of them, perhaps a little taller, a little blonder, and a little wealthier looking than the rest, said,
"You may call me Lessaguris, and who am I talking to?"
Locke raised her blade. "The woman who's going to stop you." Lessaguris nodded thoughtfully.
"Good luck with that."
He raised his right arm, and a flare of crimson energy slashed out from the paladin band, cracking like a whip as it slammed into Locke and the others. She had seen him moving and started to dive for cover, and she hit the ground rolling. The left side of her body felt like it had fallen asleep, everything stinging with pins and needles.
"Beginning to regret being right,"
Kale muttered, getting back to his feet and using his stolen staff for support.
"Responses to ranged attack insufficient," Irritheloth Leolan said as he rolled behind a table and flipped it onto its side.
Either the energy had knocked him into whatever strange mindset crystal magic did to elves, or he had activated it himself with his ring to improve his reaction time.
"Utilization of terrain to limit incoming."
"Yes, cover, gods,"
Kale shouted back. And he and Locke dove to the ground behind a stack of crates as more crimson energy flashed out at them, smashing beakers and shattering crystals where it struck.
"Door," Locke said to Kale. "I'm guessing it's going to be locked."
"Be creative."
"Understood, Captain."
He lunged to his feet and sprinted for the door leading outside, and Locke got to her feet as well. The nobles, the paladins, apparently, were advancing. There were a half dozen of them, not counting Westyke. Kale and Irithella Flealon had taken down several, while Locke had been dealing with Arica Eurici. 6 versus 3, or 2, with Kale doing something with the door, was crappy odds to begin with. The odds got worse, as Lesagoris closed with her, his quarterstaff snapping out at her head. She parried with her blade, checked it with the sheath stick, and lunged. Lesagoris parried with easy grace and kicked her in the chest in the same smooth motion. The kick wasn't stronger than a human could possibly have managed, Locke figured, as she slammed into a moving belt, but it was right there at the upper edge of normal.
"Yes, we're a little better at being you than you are," Lesagoris said with a smile. "Now, where is Arica Eurici?"
"Dead," Locke said, lifting her blade. Lesagoris gave his thoughtful nod again, and then lunged in with a circling strike that Locke parried, only to realize too late that it was a feint as the quarterstaff spun to crack down on her wrist. Her blade skittered away, sheath stick along with it, and Locke lunged in hard, punched at his wrist, and tore the quarterstaff free. His elbow caught her on the cheek, and she stumbled, got her guard down as his other hand drove a fist into her stomach, and then felt her feet go out from under her as he took out her legs. She landed on the moving belt, punched out blind, and caught something that sent him back and gave her the breathing room to get back to her feet. By the time she did, Lesagoris stood opposite her on the moving belt. He rolled out his shoulders and adjusted the long black coat.
"You know, I've missed bodies. You're not bad."
"I'm not done," Locke said. Locke was starting to hate his thoughtful nod and was about to come in swinging when a blast of crimson energy caught her from the side. She hit the ground some ways away, landing with a jolt that would have hurt more if half her body hadn't gone pins and needles again, and blinked away spots of blackness at the edge of her vision.
"I think you might be," Lesagoris said, hopping down from the moving belt. "You can't take me 1-1, and we outnumber you 2-1. Don't get me wrong, ma'am. You're fighting for your way of life, and I honour that. We did the same in our day."
"Your day is over." Locke had landed close to her blade and sheath stick. She grabbed both, slammed the blade into the sheath so that it was a walking stick once more, and used it to shove herself back to her feet.
"And now the Champion of Dawn defeated the Glimmering Folk and declared that a new day has begun," Lesagoris said. "According to Gillespower, you were instrumental in making that happen. That's why we've listened to his recommendation for leniency."
The other paladin, the one who had blasted her from the side, came around into Locke's field of view. Locke kept an eye on him as she said to Lesagoris,
"So what? I surrender and watch you destroy this world."
"I'm afraid you lost the chance for that when you stopped Arica Eurici from hobbling the Republic and the Empire."
Lesagoris shrugged.
"Ordinarily, we'd slap a band on you, but Gillespower was adamant that you'd prefer a quick death."
"He's not wrong," Locke said. Behind Lesagoris, Irithella Thalialan moved with a desperate precision, keeping the paladins back, but never getting close enough to do any real damage. Lesagoris thoughtfully nodded at her again, and she readied herself for the attack. Her side was still weak, and after fighting Arica Eurici, she wasn't moving as quickly as she needed to against someone with his power. Then the sealed door leading out of the processing center slammed open, ripping a fair chunk of the doorframe along with it, and Icy stepped into the room with Desidora behind him, her dress and hair pitch black and her skin alabaster.
"Captain!" Kale called from the ground where the door had caught him. "I got it open!"
"Rain check on the quick death," Locke called, and dove behind the crates as blasts of crimson snapped around her. She dove over one belt, dodged around another, and slid under a third, then came back to her feet at the doorway in time to see Lesagoris pointing at her. The crimson energy whip-cracked into Locke and blasted her through the doorway. This time, she didn't roll as well as she needed to, but as escapes went, she'd gone through worse.